This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hello, joining me on the Jodcast today is Professor Peter Wilkinson from the University of Manchester. Hello and welcome to the Jodcast.
Hi.
And you've been working on a new telescope at the moment that is being built on top of buildings in the centre of Manchester. Could you tell us about this project and how you built it?
Yes, well, at the moment it's called the Manchester University Student Telescope, MUST. Which is rather an amusing title since we must build it, and I'm sure we will. The idea is to try and build something that is low cost, but can do fantastic science. And at the moment we're in a learning and prototyping phase, but eventually we want to put a very large number of these panels of antennas out on the Jodrell Bank site and have a new live science experiment out at Jodrell Bank.
And what type of frequency of radiation are you observing with these telescopes? Are they optical, are they radio?
This is very much a radio experiment. And indeed, some people might say we're rather silly because we're trying to observe right in the middle of a television band. The television band, for those of you who don't know, is around about 600 megahertz, which is a wavelength of 50 centimeters, so a couple of feet. The reason why we're trying to observe there is because you can buy stuff. Kit very, very cheaply, since in the television band it's manufactured in the millions, of course. And even though we're now moving towards a higher frequency television with satellite receiver on the side of your house, there's still an awful lot of antennas on the top of your chimneys. They're called Yagi antennas, those long thin sticks with crosses across them, receiving standard television, and we're making use of an awful lot of those. In fact, at the moment I've just received 330 of them from a television manufacturer in Sheffield, and we're trying to get funding for it at the moment. There'll be 6,500 of these on the Jodrell Bank site, all pointing up at the sky, held up by frames, really like bedsteads, made out of glass fiber, they call it GRP, about 6 metres by 3 metres, each of which will have 64 of these television aerials, connected together by cables, and then that looks like the 1950s technology. But the 21st century technology is all the digital processing and computer processing that's going to make this thing come alive.
So at the moment, how many telescopes do you have that's been built, or are you trying
to... Well, at the moment, we have one on a roof of a building in Manchester, which is just about to be assembled for the first time and tested. And we're just collecting together the, not technology, but the bits for another four. They will go out on the Jodrell Bank site next summer. So we'll be testing this one on the building roof over the course of the next few months. And next summer we'll put four together on the Jodrell Bank site and connect them together with this high-powered computing stuff.
And approximately how much do each one of these things cost to build?
Well, that's the thing we're trying to do. It's rather amusing that you can buy an awful lot of gain with a television antenna for about £12. We're trying to make it... It's an interesting number. The cost of a super-duper... radio telescope, like the Jodrell Bank one, but a more modern version, always works out at something like £10,000 or €10,000 per square metre of surface. Now, when you've got a lot of square metres, like the Jodrell Bank one has 4,500 square metres of surface, you can work out that it would cost you £40 to £50 million to build Jodrell Bank again. Originally, it cost a lot less than £1 million. But inflation has been such that it would now cost £40 to £50 million. What we're trying to do here is to build a telescope for 1 or 2% of that cost. So we're trying to build something with rather comparable area, but perhaps eventually for costing about £1 million or maybe £750,000, but for many thousands of square meters. So each of them is going to cost a few hundred pounds per square meter. That's what we're trying to get down to, and that's really quite a challenge, but it's an exciting challenge.
And you said this was going to operate in the television wavelengths. How do you stop interference? Because obviously television is going to be everywhere.
Well, that's a good point. Fortunately, it turns out that in the television wavelengths, because of the switchover from analog to digital, there are chunks of a TV band that used to be full and now not quite so full as they were before because the digital signals have gone up to somewhat higher frequencies. So there are, at least temporarily, at least for maybe 5 years, maybe a little bit longer, gaps in the band that nature abhors a vacuum, and radio astronomers saw an opportunity, and we're trying to fill that gap. But there'll always be signals there, there'll always be distant TV there, And so the trick of this telescope is not to try and do everything. We're aiming to do just one type of science, and that's to look at these things called pulsars, which are these rotating neutron stars left over from a star that's gone bang, a supernova. And their pulses, they're pulsed on timescales from seconds to milliseconds. So from rotating around at a few seconds, and some of them are rotating around nearly 1,000 times a second, which is rather remarkable. Without going to the astrophysics, the main point is that they are a very special type of signal. They're pulsed, and they also have other characteristics that enable us to recognize them from all the rubbish that mankind's generating. So it's because we're looking at a very special type of radio source, and which Jodrell Bank has a fantastic 40 years of experience of doing, indeed observing in this band for pulsars, that we can be confident that even though we're observing in the midst of lots of man-made interference, we can still do a good job on pulsars. If we were trying to do other types of science, just trying to look at the total power coming from a source, then the TV signals coming and going would mess us up completely. Because we're looking for a very special type of signal,
This regular pulses.
Yeah. Or indeed, one of the other exciting things we're trying to look for is other things going bang in the sky. We don't know, as radio astronomers, whether there is a whole load of possible objects which are exploding and giving a transient flare of radio emission. Whereas in the optical band, your eye is a fantastically good receiver. Your eye is the Mark I eyeball, as they used to call it in the Air Force. If there was a star went bang, or a comet came in, you would see it. Or you could help your eye with a pair of binoculars and improve your sensitivity by a factor of 100. So there are people all over the world scanning the skies with their eyeballs, but particularly with binoculars. So if anything happens, somebody will notice it. But in the radio, we don't have the equivalent of that. We don't have a panoramic view. And so one of the things this telescope is trying to do is to observe systematically with a big wide field of view and see if there's anything going bang that we didn't know about, as well as looking for pulsars. So it's a dual role. So we're looking for very special signals, that's the point. So even though there's lots of TV around, because you're only looking for special types of signals, then you can live with it. Plus the fact that there's a little spectrum that TV signals have gone out of, at least temporarily.
So you're very quick to exploit this because the digital switchover is still just happening. How long has this concept been thought about?
Well, the concept has been around we thought about this idea for nearly 10 years ago. We nearly got started 10 years ago. We got some initial funding. And for various reasons, which now don't seem quite so sensible as they did at the time, we dropped it. And the whole point of the telescope was to do great science, but it was also to enable us to learn about how to process data from the huge new telescope that's coming 10 years from now called the Square Kilometer Array. The Square Kilometer Array, one of its big science goals is to observe pulsars, and to find pulsars around black holes and to test gravity, gravitational theories, and all sorts of other weird and wonderful things, which you can only do if you can time these pulsars incredibly accurately. So we decided we should set up an experiment that we could do at Jodrell Bank that would train us and enable us to do some of the precursor science to this huge telescope that's coming in the 2020s. We dropped it, but now we suddenly realized a couple of years ago, well, that was still a very good idea. So we've reinvented it, and now with this interesting idea of getting students to work on it. So we have students in the Jodrell Bank Observatory and Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics, but we've also got students who have worked on it, on mechanical engineering to design these frames, electrical engineering to help us with the design of the Yagis, civil engineering have helped us with the part of the frames and will help us with how to measure them, measure their positions when they're out on the Jodrell Bank site. So we're getting people from all over the university, and no doubt eventually we'll have people in computer science, because one of the final goals is to allow the public access to the data. So we have this, it's called citizen science, isn't it? You can, we'd love to let the public analyze some of the data so they can sit at home and see if they can find pulsars or see if they can find extraterrestrial intelligence. Not that we're expecting to find extraterrestrial intelligence, but if you observe systematically over and over and over again, you'll find signals that you wouldn't do if you were just waving your telescope all over the sky. That's how pulsars were discovered in the first place. It was with a telescope 40 years previous to this, just fixed, looking at the sky. Because they were looking at the same part of the sky over and over again, they recognized that some signals that they thought were interference were in fact repeating not every 24 hours, but every 23 hours, 56 minutes, which is how fast a time the Earth goes around with respect to the stars. We go around with respect to the sun every 24 hours, but with respect to the stars, 23 hours, 56 minutes. So it was because they were looking very systematically at the same bits of sky day after day after day. You see things you otherwise wouldn't. So that's one of the many goals of this experiment. But fundamentally, pulsars and transient events, things going bang.
And it's all been done in-house at the University of Manchester with the different departments.
It is at the moment, and certainly for the first phase, you can do it at a few tens of thousands of pounds so far. If this all works, one of my colleagues in pulsar scientist, Dr. Ben Stappers, is hoping to raise a much bigger sum of money, closer to €1 million, to build the final instrument.
How rare is it that one university can build an entire telescope from concept to completion?
These days, increasingly rare, because big science is now forcing you to go to multi-university, or of course huge international. The SKA is an enormous international project, it's going to cost several billion euros eventually. Even university-university projects now tend to cost, I don't know, £5 to £10 million if you want to study the microwave background or invent a new type of radio receiver to do something. So that's the whole point of this. We're trying to force the costs down by choosing to observe in a band where you can buy things cheaply. And so we're trying to use, in some sense, in terms of technology, relatively, crude is the wrong word, but very mature technologies, except for the digital processing at the back end, and that's going to be 21st century. But we're trying to use the technology of the 1950s, you might say, to drive the costs down for the collecting area, and then attach to that the technology of the 2010s or 2020s to take the data from the telescopes and let you look at a huge range of areas that you couldn't otherwise do. So it's a wonderful, I like to think it's a wonderful combination of the old and the new.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us and telling us all about this telescope.
My pleasure.